previously on Getting the Mecha.
And so many other things within these characters' minds is something which is very hard to portray. How do you actually visually portray an existential crisis? How do you portray someone who consistently searching for meaning and is trying to find the meaning within their own life? He effectively managed to tear it apart and tear apart his characters and constructs, and even just the capability of the audience to think about what was going to come next.
This is Getting the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it.
Welcome back to Getting the Mecha. I'm your host Jamal today, and in today's episode, we have returned to Evangelion analysis. That's kind of the norm around here. And we are looking into what is the future, or we are diving a bit into the concept of the future in Evangelion. I honestly don't want this to be a long episode. However, I do think that there is a important message which should come from this, and it's really a really big ironic point about Evangelion and what it being said in the future does, and also what it tries to imply about the future, which we will dive into concisely today. And so I don't think I have much more to say after this. Let's dive into the episode for this week. That is episode 69, looking into what the future is in Evangelion. As per every episode, I like to begin by giving you alerts for spoilers in case there are any, because I don't want you blaming me if you run into them. And so this episode will probably not contain very explicit spoilers. Yes, it will contain some things which, yes, you can consider spoilers, because I'm talking about the entire series and things that you wouldn't know if you just walked in the series or you were halfway. Those things wouldn't make sense, and so I would say spoiler alert, but there won't be many character examples and very specific nitty-gritty points, because what we are analyzing today is basically the very groundwork of Neon Genesis Evangelion. And so this episode will be not very meta, but very sort of passive and detached from the big plot points which make up Evangelion, as we're really going to be looking at Eva as a time span, but also kind of just as not really separating it by events and specific moments. As I said, this episode is going to be focused on the very groundwork of Eva, being the fact that it is set in the future. It's set in 2015. And as a result, I think that if we are analyzing the very groundwork of Evangelion, we learn this from the start, Tokyo 3, 2015. It would be rather backwards, in my opinion, to kind of talk about all the character things that come into it. Yes, we can talk about its influence on the show, but I personally want to really just pump out this episode by talking about the groundwork on its own, rather than stuff it full with examples. Looking at it today, I think it's very easy to forget that Evangelion is set in the future. It is set in 2015, and yes, now we've passed that, but the intention was obviously for Eva at the time was that it wasn't in 2015. The future, or 2015 relative to Evangelion, was 20 years into the future, as it did air in 1995. It isn't really the exact date, though, that I think is of massive importance. I think Evangelion, or Neon Genesis Evangelion, if we're referring to the original series, could have been set in 2077, 2099, any of those cool futuristic days, 2050, or 2020 even, I think would be very appropriate considering what's happening, even though they wouldn't know that, or Anu wouldn't know. But I think the very point is the fact that it is ahead of current civilization or current societies in 1995 versus 2015. What I think is of real value to me is what is the future, kind of in the like normative conceptual sort of sense. I know that didn't really make much sense at all, But the point is that the goal isn't really to look at it scientifically, because I don't think it provides awful amounts of scientific value if you're evaluating its specific point in time and the fact that it's in 2015 exactly. It's just the point that it's ahead. It is a new phase, a new style of living. It's a new way of organizing society. It's with this idea that we can understand assumptions about the future and assumptions about how those within it should be living. This is where we start to get really deep into it, because I actually have a starting point for us analyzing the future or this idea of it. And that actually comes from the song Peaceful Times in Evangelion 3.0. It's fine if you haven't watched it, because I haven't seen it myself. I just know the song, and it's really the message that I think we can apply to the original series. For multiple reasons, I obviously won't be singing the song, as I can't sing and it will probably burn your ears. And also, I'm not going to say or read out every part of the song. It's not a long song anyway, but I'd much rather keep it concise to what we're actually going to speak about rather than talk about everything, because not all of it really matters to us. It's really the message itself, which I haven't really taken in. I didn't even realize it was in English on the first few times where I just listened to it in the background. But when you really listen to it, it has a very important message where I think we can start from. And so we have some lines in the first verse, and they go, "This time is like no other time for us in living memory. Long may it last. Breathe the air. Take in the feeling of peace and harmony. Freedom can fly close to the sky. Peace in time. We've never had it so good." So that is the first verse, and then the second verse, or the lines in the second verse that are important to us. "Spirit is high, peace in time, we've never had it so good." For some reason, I feel like we're doing like a poetry podcast or something like that. I actually really enjoyed reading that out. So I do hardly get to read things out. I think the last thing I properly read something, besides that one quote in the Attack on Titan episode, was the Arno and Eva episode. But into what this really means, the overall assumptions come from this idea that the future is good, or it's the best time we've ever lived. It's where the place we're in within human history is the we're living at the best time ever. With this assumption, I think there are two ways we can interpret this, and they kind of end separately. There's one which I think I will emphasize on more, whereas the other I'll kind of leave cut off, because it's not, I don't agree with it, but also I don't think it takes us very far into our analysis. The one I'm less confident on is that we can interpret this as the sort of narrative for instrumentality, and it actually could be the case now I look back at it, but I'll kind of just go on with my point and stick to my position. But this can be the narrative for instrumentality, or the potential instrumentality that could take place. This in itself kind of sounds like a fabricated argument. It sounds almost like propaganda to suggest that instrumentality is the best you ever live, and you will live in peace and harmony. Freedom is maximized in the state. Merging us all together, basically, is a means to an end. We sacrifice our individuality in order to gain freedom forever, to gain absolute freedom. We sacrifice our freedoms in the physical world. This freedom, however, is something which is contested, as we have spoken about freedom quite a lot, and what we are not free from, even though this will tie into the other argument, but what we're not free from are our roles and our essences, which are attached to us, and our existences are in question. However, with absolute freedom, we won't need these essences, we won't need the shackles of our roles which come with societies and living in a world. We can really get this from the line, "Breathe the air, take in the feeling of peace and harmony." What's interesting is that if this is truly the narrative of instrumentality, is that there's no real way to validate them, because one does not go into instrumentality and just come out of it. How do we judge instrumentality as the best stage of human history or the best we've ever lived if none of us have experienced it? How do we simply just go into instrumentality? And I guess that is kind of what is so eerie about this and the nature of the song. The song isn't necessarily sung by a character or anyone specific, or when I say that, I mean, obviously there's an artist, but this isn't Oscar singing the song or Ray singing the song. It's this passive voice that is suggesting something to us. And so it's like, who or what is this oriented at? Which I find rather thrilling and something I actually didn't manage to consider previously. As much as I think this interpretation or reasoning is very interesting, I think it is kind of empty and circular, because we just kind of end up questioning, how do we know someone in instrumentality to tell us? It's like the whole thing with people in heaven. How do we know heaven exists if no one's gone up and come back to tell us? It does end up being like that, and so I don't think it's the most constructive thing for suggesting that we've lived, or instrumentality is the peak of human history or the living experience of humanity. And so that takes us to our second avenue as to interpreting this poem or song, and that is if we're to apply it to the pre-instrumental world, and that is, the future is now. That I'm sure that is a quote from somewhere, I just can't remember. But if we were to apply this argument of us living at our best to the pre-instrumental world, so in the case of Eva, this would be episode 1 to 24, just normal Tokyo 3. I think we can perceive Eva very differently and potentially even as a completely different anime with this in mind. This would create this sort of conflicting narrative that would argue that even though we are living in very dire situations, in the case of Tokyo 3, we are fending off angels and the population has been cut massively. Despite the existential threat and general struggles of living every day, we are still living in the greatest time within human history. We are living better than we have before, and it's weird because this is a genuine argument within history, within historical scholarship. Are we living better than we ever have before? And yes, some people do argue this, some historians do argue this, and when we look at what they argue or how they argue this, I think it's very fair to talk about it on the very surface level that we, in regards to economics, everyone is quote-unquote richer than we than before versus 100 or 200 years ago. Yes, there are less wars. Society has progressed as a result, and those are true, and there is definitely an argument for it. There is a good case to be made. Basically, the yes perspective is very assuming of how we live, and it suggests that the things are better than they were before. I think sometimes there's this view, or a lot of people do take up this view, that yes, you can view history as progressive, but I think it's the idea that we've inevitably progressed from where we were before, and we were better than we were in the 1900s. We are better now than we were in the 1800s. And this isn't really me imparting my view on this argument. I just think it misses quite a lot of, or not a lot, but it misses out on some core things which we'll even uncover relative to Evangelion. When this argument is used in real life, I do think it's a bit more complicated, but in the world of Evangelion and Tokyo 3, yes, we can talk about the development of technologies. We have these EVA units, we're able to defend ourselves from existential threats, and we're successful in doing it most of the time. Generally, technology is progressing and it's at its potential peak within Neon Genesis Evangelion also. But I would say that this kind of assumes that we're very materialistic people, we're very materialistic beings, and so we're more content with our lives and with ourselves because we have better things around us, and we are richer, and we do have more stuff, and so our lives have drastically improved as a result, and will continue to improve as we gain access to more stuff in the future, and better stuff in the future. I hope you could hear the, like, spite or sarcasm in my voice there, because I disagree with that idea. From the song, we can extract this from the line, "This is like no other time for us in living memory." The assumption that we, again, are living better than we have before. I will get to my counterpoint, but I really just want to lay out this argument first before I really attack it. And so we can get another line from the song as well. It's this notion of freedom can fly. And what I find really funny about that is that freedom as is has always been represented as, you know, wings or removing the shackles. It's already seen as very freeing. Freedom is the ability to, in the context of wings, it's the ability to escape the ground. And it's the fact that freedom as a concept can fly. And so we've kind of reached the peak of human freedom when the concept itself also has wings, when the thing that already provides people wings, the wings of freedom, has wings in itself. So it's really doubling down on this fact that we are more free than we ever have before, because even freedom itself can fly. But now my counter argument, this is where I think it gets really interesting. And the irony for me comes from the fact that what we consider freedom doesn't really come from the material. It's something that's a lot deeper than that. In my previous episodes, which I do recommend, if I do remember, there should be a previously on Gets in the Mecha moment on this episode to kind of indicate that it's probably a good idea to listen to something like the Unknown Evangelion episode, or what would be the probably most appropriate would be the Absurdism and Meaning episode. I think that's episode 40 of the podcast. Just check the Evangelion playlist, which now actually exists on Spotify. But in our discussions about existentialism and absurdist analyses of freedom, the reason why we're not free doesn't really come down to things. It's not like, okay, we're trapped in a prison. As humans, we're not free for other reasons. And it isn't explicitly really to do with progress, or it doesn't really concern history, but it's who we are and what the world is. At least in the existentialist analysis, I'm going to be very summarizing here, and so please don't expect me to go into all the details or as much detail as I had before. But in summary, the existentialists would argue that this comes down to self-deception and bad faith. These roles and the imposition of roles upon us, what Sartre would refer to as essences, gives us the ability to ignore our core or our existence. And so it really gets down to how free are we as people. Then the absurdist roots, or at least the Camusian absurdist roots, would really surround freedom, or at least a really good way to understand freedom would be through the literature, the myth of Sisyphus, and this metaphor of Sisyphus for an eternity forced to roll this boulder up and down. And the thing about that is that, well, it's not up and down, but we're kind of bound to repeat ourselves, and we're bound in this weird state of repetition and nothingness, potentially, if we don't manage to recognize the absurd, the contradiction between the human search for meaning and the meaninglessness of the world. So we're chasing nothing, basically. That is kind of what Camus would argue. And so I think that the center of this really is, it boils down to, how can we be free if there is no innate concept of freedom to begin with? If nothing has innate meaning, then what exactly is freedom? How does that truly exist? And so we're kind of chasing nothing. And so I think we can equally argue that we are not free in the absurdist point of view if we apply it to Evangelion. But it's all good talking philosophy, and I know that that was a very weird mouthful, a very summarized mouthful of two of the most important philosophers in this area of philosophy. But what exactly does this mean for Evangelion, besides the philosophical argument that we aren't necessarily free? I said that in quotation marks. What this reveals for me is that, well, from this song and poem from Evangelion 3.0, Peaceful Times, is that despite all the progress in society, we're not necessarily free, and the material isn't particularly freeing, but the concept of freedom really lies within us. It doesn't really lie within history progressing, but us progressing as people, if you can call it progress. I'm sure there'll be someone that disagrees with that. But human progress doesn't necessarily derive from progress within history, but it's progress within us, and progress within our emotional state and how we navigate around those. The human condition or human nature, I don't think has changed for a very long time. And it's funny because the last episode, when we're talking about Kizumonogatari, I spoke a lot about primitive emotions. And I wouldn't say that Eva is a showcase of the very primitive nature of humanity. Yes, it does show off the fight and flight responses, especially Shinji, like all the time. And in fact, that is most of End of Evangelion anyway. But Shinji does represent complex human behavior in the way we deny our problems and we try to escape them rather than solve them and look them in the eye. But these things aren't things that have changed because of the fact that we are in a quote-unquote further space within history, or we have progressed through our time and we have more things and we are living better than ever. I don't think we're living better than ever, and Evangelion really shows that for us. I do think we have a tendency within science fiction, if we're allowed to call Eva science fiction, I think we really glamorize the future sometimes, and it fails to account for the stagnancy within human behavior. It fails to account for us and how we feel deep down, rather than this very homogenized view that everyone is doing better because everyone statistically is richer, or everyone statistically in society feels happier, but it doesn't really take into account the individual. And I wouldn't even say as a society we're happier anyway, but Evangelion shows that depending on the person, and also every person reacts differently and acts differently, obviously. That is kind of the whole point of having different characters. But even so, in a time like the quote-unquote future, we still suffer from many issues. And I don't even mean, like, if we apply it to today, I don't even mean issues like climate change and issues and cybersecurity. I don't mean those issues. I don't mean like what some would call like the issues of postmodernity. I'm not really talking about those things, but I just mean we still suffer from very personal issues. We still suffer from issues like some of us still have attachment issues, and that's something which is applicable to Evangelion. We still have personal problems like comparing ourselves to others when we aren't particularly, at least in my view, competing with each other. There are a lot of things we can extract from Eva that it'll get very granular for us to go through every flaw within every character, or at least what I can perceive to be a flaw, a negative behavior. But it's the fact that these things still exist and we haven't become these. Sometimes in these futuristic shows or anime or something, it's like, yeah, the future, we've just completely changed our mindset now. We're living great now. Yes, we had the hoverboards and everything, and so I'm just so much more efficient with my life. And no, Evangelion is completely against that idea. And if anything, represents the same human character that we were in 1995 in 2015. There is no... Anno doesn't attempt to account for the time and suggest that human behavior has changed, because it simply doesn't change that quickly or at all. And so I think the massive point and takeaway from Evangelion being in the future is that even though it is, what is more important about it is that even though time and societies from the outside view move forward, I see in quotation marks, even though they do move forward and progress technologically and economically, human beings and us as entities, we don't change very much, and we don't change very quickly. We have to adapt to our situation, yes, but humans aren't very adaptable, according to Evangelion, because I think the Eva unit in itself assumes that we are these, it assumes we are these quote-unquote 2015 beings that can handle the emotional stress and pressure. But being children and also being humans, we are awfully flawed, and it being within 2015 just highlights that exactly. Anno setting Evangelion in 2015, or just the future, is something that we cannot ignore because of the fact that it reveals the biggest flaw within Eva, or at least one of the biggest things that we should take into account, and that is humanity is awfully flawed. The song Peaceful Times works as a way of contrasting this to suggest that, if you are to take on my argument anyway, that we are living in the best time ever. But what that fails to take into account is that society might be in its best stage or best time ever, but human nature still remains awfully unchanged. And with all of that, that is the analysis for this week. I didn't want this to be a very long analysis. I want it to be actually quite short. And this is partially because of everything which I have to do this week as alongside record a podcast and edit it. But also, I think that this isn't a massive point, but it's a very important one. And I think going forward, this is something which we sort of already covered in our analyses, but we already have covered it with the assumption of it in mind. But I want to clear up the assumption as opposed to assume it. I want to bring it actively into light rather than it being passively within us as we analyze Evangelion. I wasn't going to do an in-the-moment segment, but now I've actually thought of something. And so let's talk about something which is kind of anime-related. And I hope maybe that there are listeners that can relate to this. But let's go into the in-the-moment segment and talk about something kind of in relation to anime. If you are new to the In The Moment segment, do not worry, it's very simple. All I do is I talk about what I've been reading, watching, or doing kind of anime or manga related this week, or recently. And in today's In The Moment segment, I would like to say that I have dived down the VTuber rabbit hole. I don't know why that sounds like such a massive statement, but I feel like it is, considering now how the whole VTube thing, I knew about it before, but it's kind of blown up. And with all the, I'm more a Hololive person, even though I know there are other VTube groups and independent VTubers. But I'm really into the virtual YouTuber thing now, and specifically the Japanese VTubers, mostly like the first generation, I think they are. But also I do like Hololive EN as well. So I'm not the right person to explain virtual YouTubers to you. If you need help with that, there are plenty of YouTube videos, which some which are just self-explanatory. So just watch some clips of some virtual YouTubers and you'll get the vibe, or watch a whole like video essay about it, because that will also do a very good job. And okay, I partially got into it because of a friend, but I knew about virtual YouTube prior, but it didn't really appeal to me so much. I think that's because I didn't really know the potential it came with, seeing an anime girl or guy on screen playing games. I was like, but what is the value of someone doing this versus not showing their face or streaming just with a webcam? I didn't see the value. I didn't see the potential in it, even though I didn't have a problem with it, but I just didn't know how far it could really go. But watching the Hololive YouTubers and everything, I've really started to realize that, okay, this is actually really cool, or at least they can actually do so much with this. Everything from massive anime girl motion capture dance streams to these big collabs with all these different personalities. And it's basically like watching your favorite anime character be that anime character in parts while playing a game. Yes, they are playing a character to a degree, but it obviously, a lot of the emotions stem from genuine emotions and reactions. I'm sure a lot of them do put on voices, because I'm sure they do have some voice experience, or at least some streaming experience of some sort, but they're still reacting live, because you still can't predict what's going to happen when you're watching a live stream. And so you're probably asking, if you are a really big fan of virtual YouTubers, of Hololive and all that, who am I watching? And I'll be honest and say, I know quite a few of them. I'm not an expert, trust me. Like, if you are listening to this and you're excited about virtual YouTubers, you probably know more than me anyway. And so I'm watching Kiryokoko, I watch a bit of Pekora, and I'm trying to dabble into Amelia Watson as well as Guara as well. I hope I said all those names right, because I do get those things wrong. And I do watch a bit of Miko as well. Well, one of my friends is really into Miko, like a lot. The VTuber I watch the most is Coco, I'll be honest. I do watch a bit of Pekra here and there, but Coco's the first one where I actually watched a full, like, live stream of her playing Terraria recently. But she's been playing and it's actually really fun to watch. And again, I'm just seeing the potential in it. It's not to say that, I think what's good to establish is that even though it is a character playing a game, it isn't to the level where it feels fake and fabricated, and you still get a genuine sense of who they are and how they play games and also how they enjoy playing games. And so that is the In The Moment segment for this week. I don't want to go too long about VTubers, but I am really happy about it. And I think there are very interesting things that can come out of the whole virtual YouTuber thing. It's really interesting just seeing an anime character play a game versus watching someone who's quote unquote real. Obviously, there are real people behind the virtual YouTubers, but it's very cool seeing. It's just very interesting when you add anime to something, okay? Now let's jump to serious stuff again, being Evangelion, just to summarize my points on the future and why the future is so important to this anime. The biggest thing I want you to take away from this podcast episode is that the future is important because it reveals a very big flaw. A flaw that, not a flaw within Arno's writing, but a flaw within humanity, or at least it's the crevice in human behavior. It's the crevice within the argument that history or who we are, we're living in the best time ever because we are living in the brunt of history. We're living within the tip of it, but living at the front of it, which is the now and the present. And so that argument is taken on and suggests that we are living in the best time we are ever in human history. But as Arno manages to reveal, not only just through the song, but the song really reveals it even more and makes it more obvious. But even through just it being said in the future, we can acknowledge that even though societies can evolve, it doesn't mean that humans evolve with it too. This idea of constant progress, which comes with these more modern societies, and even our society is based on these ideas of progress, which come with capitalism and a lot of other things. There are still many problems that are deeply ingrained within us that we need to solve and come to terms with. But Eva also manages to prove, thank you Shinji, that we don't necessarily like to solve these problems, and these problems are very deeply rooted ones, which don't improve because of societal progress or us moving into the future. Thank you for listening to this episode of Guest in the Mecha. That has been episode 69, the funny number episode that wasn't even funny at all. I hope you did enjoy this one. I'll be honest and say that I didn't want this to go on for too long. I've said it a lot of times already, but I am really happy it didn't go on for too long, because this isn't a massive point, but it's something that should underpin what we're thinking about going forward. I enjoy bringing out these things because sometimes we do assume things, but we don't really question what we assume. And we managed to do that today, so I think that's a really big W, or a really big win for us today. If you do enjoy this podcast, I would be a very happy Jamal if you reviewed it on whatever site or podcast app you use. It gives it all that lovely algorithm loveliness, so it'd be really great if you could do that. Just a quick plug before we end the episode, or a few plugs. First thing is that I have a series of Spotify playlists out now. So if you are a Spotify listener, to be fair, you could even be listening to this in the playlist right now. But if you are a Spotify listener and you go to Get in Mecha in playlists, there are, I believe, 4 playlists that I've made: the animation route, the Evangelion route, the Attack on Titan route, and the Shonen route. So these are all playlists which I've made myself, which contain about 4 or 5 hours of content. This should be in the Evangelion route by the time it comes out. And so what it is basically just some handpicked podcast episodes. If you aren't really willing to go through the entire thing and use my episode guides like that, I've made the job easier for you, because you can now just go through the episodes, or the episode guide has been compressed into an actual playlist for you to use. If you do wish to check those episode guides out right now, they are on my Twitter page, and if you go into the media tab, they should all be there if you want the quote-unquote best episodes of Getting the Mecha to listen to. So that's all my announcements. You can leave now. You can turn on the podcast. But I have been your host, Jamal, today. Have a good one. The year's almost over, so that's very good. I have been your host, Jamal, today, and this has been Getting the Mecha.
The music in this production goes as follows: 8-bit title screen by Joth, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, Difference by Chasers Gaming, and Anomaly by Eric Midia's UndersoundImage.org.